Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Nice to have you with us on this Wednesday, October the 24th. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. President Bush says he needs another $46 billion to give troops what they need to get the job done in Iraq and Afghanistan. He outlined his congressional war funding request Monday after meeting with veterans and military personnel. He urged lawmakers to put aside their partisan disagreements and to make sure our troops have what they need to succeed. In all, the Bush administration has now asked for more than $196 billion to fund security operations since the budget year began on October the 1st. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says the president should not expect a rubber stamp on his latest request. He says Democrats have been fighting for America's priorities while the president continues investing only in what Reid describes as his failed war strategy. We'll talk about this latest battle over war funding between Congress and the president and wonder what you want to see happen. Plus, we'll talk with our guest about the comments of Senator Barbara Boxer yesterday. She said that the war in Iraq has diverted resources that could and should be used in fighting all those fires in California. Plus, in the House yesterday, lawmakers decided to drop a resolution to censure a congressman, Congressman Pete Stark. He is the Democratic congressman from California who said that President Bush was amused at the deaths of troops in Iraq. He said that U.S. troops in Iraq are being sent there to get their heads blown off for the president's amusement. Anyway, he apologized for making those comments, and the House decided yesterday not to censure him. We'll talk about all these issues and welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are happy to have with us as our guest, Dale Hirspring. He is the Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University. He's also a member on the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, and he is the author of many books, including Rumsfeld's Wars, Arrogance of Power. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Lots of stuff to talk about today. First of all, the president says he needs another $46 billion to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, bringing this to $196 billion. Is he going to get it?
I don't know, because most of the $46 billion is supposed to be for procurement, in other words, to replace all the weapons that have been worn out. I mean, that money is not going to go so much for Iraq and Afghanistan, as my understanding is, it's going to go to try and replace equipment, because You use it, you lose it, and a lot of the stuff is just simply worn out.
So $196 billion is needed for new equipment?
Well, no, I'm talking about
the extra
$46 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But the $196, as I understand it, and I'm not a budget specialist, but I understand it's going to be used for everything. I mean, there are costs for Afghanistan, for example. They're right near Fort Riley, and they have a big training program going on for how to train advisors. They put into Iraqi environment and everything like that. Well, that's part of Iraq, even though it's sitting right here in the middle of Kansas.
Yeah. Well, he said he wanted this by Christmas, and Democrats say there's no need to rush. Which is it?
Well, on the procurement part, the Democrats are flat wrong, because you have to have a lead time on weapons procurement, things like that. You simply cannot wait. They have to, you know, there's a lead time. It takes time to build stuff. It takes time to get it on the road. Now, in terms of the money for actually fighting a war, then, you know, you can do it. It just creates uncertainty on the minds of people who's going to be what and where.
Yeah. Let me get your reaction to U.S. Representative Dave Obey of Wisconsin. He's from our 7th Congressional District. He's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee.
Mm-hmm.
When he heard this, he criticized President Bush for pushing for this extra money at the same time that the president was criticizing Democrats as being spendthrifts. He said, "It's amazing to me that the president expects to be taken seriously when he says we cannot afford $20 billion in investments in education, health, law enforcement, science, which will make this country stronger over the long term. But he doesn't blink an eye in asking to borrow $200 billion for a policy in Iraq that leaves us 6 months from now exactly where we were 6 months ago."
Well, first of all, the last statement, he doesn't know if that's going to be true. I mean, because casualties are down considerably now. And whether it's going to hold or not, of course, is the big question. We don't know the answer to that. So that last statement is just really sort of a silly one, because we don't know what it assumes, that the surge is not going to have any long-term effect, and we simply don't know if that's happening. Certainly it's not with the police, but it seems to be having a positive effect with the Iraqi military. Second of all, in a constitutional sense, the executive's primary task is national security. I mean, that's your first obligation. The social things come second. And so Bush can make an argument that my primary job is to protect the country, and in his mind, that needs to be used for this. A lot of things now getting put into what we euphemistically called in Washington, silly season, because we're getting into the election period, and a lot of things are being said on both sides that make a lot of sense, but they're there because they'll appeal for election things for one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about Senator Barbara Boxer yesterday saying that the war in Iraq was diverting resources that could and should be used in fighting all those wildfires in California.
Well, that's just silly. There's 17,000 National Guard troops available to be taken in. 1,500 or so far have been taken in. There's absolutely no evidence of that, because the National Guard Bureau has made National Guard troops from around the country available if California asks for them. And California has 1,500 there, plus the Camp Pendleton, the Marine Corps, has, I think, something like 3,000 people on alert to be used if, in fact, they're needed. So, I mean, it's just a silly statement. It's just not true.
Yeah. And I also wanted to ask you about what you thought about in the House of Representatives yesterday. Congressman Pete Stark did apologize for making those comments that the U.S. troops are being sent to Iraq to, quote, get their heads blown off for the president's amusement.
Well, I think that everybody on both sides of the aisle thought that was an absolutely asinine statement. I'm glad to see he apologized. In fact, he used to at one point be my congressman when I was at Stanford. And I think he did the right thing. I think they were going to censor him, but he's big enough to stand up and say, "Hey, I was wrong. I shouldn't have said that." And beyond that, what else is there to say? And the fact that it's what Washington calls a one-day story, it's over with.
Well, then back to the funding issue. The Democrats are saying there's no hurry. We're not going to rubber stamp your request for this war funding. What do you anticipate happening?
Well, I mean, the Democrats have, and I'm just being my normal cynical self, having lived in Washington, Democrats are in a bind right now, simply because of what's happened now so far. The surge has been working, at least in terms of violence, okay? And they're trying to find a way to peel both of the left wing and to keep the Republicans on the hook. And so they're going to try and drag this out, and hoping something will happen that they can then score points off of. It's normal. It's the way Washington works. Both sides do it. And so I see them continuing to fight, drag this out, and see how many points they can score from it.
Yeah. Do you you don't see Congress trying to defund this war, do you?
No. I mean, that would guarantee a Republican on a White House next year. And they're not that stupid. Because if you defund the war, I mean, then it's a case of you're voting against the troops. And that's the way Bush is trying to phrase it. You know, if you vote no, if you don't vote yes right now, you're against the troops, which, of course, I don't think is not true. I don't think Democrats are against the troops. But what they're doing is they're playing sound bites for who can get the higher ground on this sort of thing, which, you know, doesn't make somebody who's sitting in Baghdad being shot at feel very good, but that's what's going on.
Our guest is Dale Hirspring. He is University Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, and we are talking with him about war funding. President Bush is requesting an extra $46 billion for war funding, making the total request $196 billion to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We are wondering what you think, what questions you have, whether you want Congress to provide this funding by Christmas, like the president says it's needed by, or whether you you want Congress to drag its feet at this, or maybe even not fund it at all. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock, it's Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders with Gene Faraca. Gene will be talking with Gary Sick, who is a principal White House aide during the 1979 Iranian Revolution and the U.S. hostage crisis. He's coming to Wisconsin this week. He'll be in Madison tomorrow. And we'll talk with Gene about whether a U.S. strike on Iran is inevitable. That's after 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about war funding and the politics of war funding and, in general, getting an update on issues related to the war in Iraq and Afghanistan with Dale Hirspring. He is University Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University. And let me ask you, Professor Hirspring, to what your answer to that question is that Gene will be talking about this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Is a war with Iran inevitable?
Well, depends on who you talk to. I think that's very much what our vice president would like to see. I mean, a war, military action.
Right, a strike.
A strike, and because it would all be done by air. The honest answer is I don't know. My fear is that we're heading down that slippery slope because the Iranians are digging their heels in when they've changed their negotiator. A couple days ago, they're not moving. The Russians, and I have a number of indications, there's an awful lot going on behind the scenes between the United States and Russia right now. A number of Russians I know in Moscow have come back, and they seem to be right on most things, that there's a lot going on behind the scenes, that the Russians don't trust the Iranians any more than we do. The Russians think they're crazy, but they've also got an awful lot of economic investment there. And so there's some hope that while the media in this country is playing Putin as being a bad guy, there's some hope that the Russians could be helpful in this whole thing.
Yeah. And help us also understand another issue in the news regarding Iraq is that Turkey is now threatening to invade and take up fighting with the Kurds in northern Iraq.
Well, that's something I don't know. That's nobody's fault. It's simply the fact that the PKK sits over. The Kurds are in Turkey, they're in Syria, and they're in Iran. It's sort of a strange thing, and the only one that seems to have any kind of independent entity is the one that's in Iraq. And this is a group that's basically trying to liberate, from their standpoint, Kurdish fellow Kurds who are living in Turkey. It's been going on for a long, long time. And the Turkish government has frankly just come under tremendous political pressure, and they're getting very tired. They had 12 soldiers killed just a couple of days ago. They also had 8 of them who were taken kidnapped, and they've been lobbing shells across the border into camps held by the Kurdish camps. This one could blow up the whole Middle East. I mean, we could end up with one hell of a mess in the Middle East if that were to happen, if they were to actually move in. But I think the Turks are showing tremendous restraint. The Iraqis have said they're going to do their very best to stop them from going across the border. The PKK has now offered Turks an armistice, which means they're being put under tremendous pressure, and the United States is putting tremendous pressure on it. Nobody wants Turkey to invade, including Turkey.
Let's go to the phones. George in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
What a wild week we've had as far as money and finances go. Monday, I heard that the S-CHIP proposal was not, they did not overturn the veto. That budget that was proposed and was held to by the president resulted in 1.8 million children, which are currently on the S-CHIP roster, taken off. That was Monday. Yesterday, we heard about this proposal for another $100 billion for financing the war in Iraq. Immediately a day after, we refused to give these children this finances. And then yesterday, we've got Greenspan's replacement saying that he wants to form some kind of collaboration between banks to bail out these investors on these mortgage notes. My question, I guess it's just a comment. The normal guy looking at this who's paying out these debts, and this is our government on the front end of this, how do we justify these types of decisions and behaviors? I'll take my answer off air.
Well, I'm not a spokesman for the administration. I can tell you what I think, how I think the administration will respond. The S-chip problem was that it would not just for, quote, poor people. It would take it up to $62,000 with an option to go up to $80,000 by state by state. And it was a concern that it was moving aid towards socialized type medicine. A lot of people would just drop their regular insurance coverage and go to the S-chip and to put the government in charge. And a lot of people think that, in fact, wouldn't do anybody good. I've also been told there's well over 1.5 million kids who could be on it, but their parents simply have not signed them up to be on the S-chip. So I think what's going to probably happen is that will be negotiated out. And the money that they're talking about, it simply depends on how important you consider national security, because, like I said, it's not all for Iraq and Afghanistan. I think the concern is primarily with Iraq, not so much with Afghanistan. I think there's a lot more support for Afghanistan after all NATO's in there. But in terms of if you're going to have troops, you're going to have to pay them, and you're going to have to build. It's expensive. Equipment wears out. Equipment has to be replaced. We're doing complete things with the whole changing of the cars that they're driving in. That has to all be changed, and that costs lots of money.
Thank you, George. Joy in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Joy. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Let me be upfront and honest. I'm a Democrat. I did not support the war. But once we went there, I was all for it. My question is, if George Bush wants this funding, why not do a war tax? I mean, I don't agree with the way the Democratic Party is saying, no, you can't have the money. My attitude is we have to support these troops no matter what. But why not say, okay, if we're going to do this, let's pay for it now and not let's pay for it later.
Yeah, it seems to me that Representative Obi and some other Democrats did propose an Iraq war tax, Professor Hurspring.
Well, I mean, I think against politics, they don't want to have everybody's tax go up, let's say, by 15% or whatever that would be, 10%. And as you're coming up to an election next year, I mean, that would send every Republican who's running for office up a wall, the thought that you're going to hit another tax. I mean, remember when gas tax was put on a long time ago and what that did. I think that's basically, it's a political issue. I mean, she's right. We're doing it now, make it hurt now, make it feel it now, not for your children and grandchildren, but it's a political thing. I mean, if I were a Republican congressman and I heard of that, I would scream bloody murder.
Yeah. But in terms of it's just not going to pass. That proposal won't pass.
The debt's going to be dead on arrival, simply because, not because she doesn't have a good point, and not because I don't think it might not be a good idea. It's simply politically not doable.
Yeah. Dan in Grand Chute is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Quick question. You're talking about very large sums of money to fund this war, $40, $50 million increases up to an excess of $100 billion. Obviously, the average person cannot really conceive of what $1 billion is. My question is simple. Can we, in the United States, maintain our standard of living while we're paying out such huge sums of money to support this war? Thank you, Dan.
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not an economist. I know there are people who worry about it, people who worry about the amount of our debts held by China and gives China leverage over us. I simply am not competent to answer that kind of question. There, some economists say this is not a problem because it's only a small part of 2 or 3% of GDP. We've gone up to 6% of GDP, and so therefore it's not important. Others turn around and say, yes, it is. I simply don't know.
Yeah. And our next caller is Joe in Menasha. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I think what they should do is, with all that money that they cannot account for in Iraq, that $1.2 billion just recently, before they get one more dime from our government, that should should be accounted for before we give them any more. Because I'll tell you, this is a dirty shame. And I think, how do we know that that money, they know where it is because it's coming back to America and they're using that for campaigns and advertising over the air in the United States?
Do you know, Professor Hirschspring, about this unaccounted-for money?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, there's two sources. First of all, I saw something from somebody very senior in the American military in Iraq. I just got yesterday, basically complaining about the level of corruption that the senior Iraqi leadership live very comfortably. I mean, the corruption is simply a way of life. Second is the question about American companies' degree to which some of them have unaccounted for funds. The latter I'm less concerned about because it's just a matter of time before they get around. In fact, some of them have already been nailed by the General Accounting Office. But the Iraqi thing, it may well be the one thing we can't change, and as a result, it may well be the thing that causes us the most heartache is simply that the corruption is so widespread and it's so common that it's an integral part of the society.
Yeah. Any comment on Secretary of State Rice is backing tougher oversight of private guards who protect American diplomats in Iraq? This is Blackwater.
Right, right. Let me explain the problem. Mm-hmm. When the buildup to go into Iraq, the State Department was excluded from the decision-making process. It was all done strictly by the Pentagon. And so as a result, when we went in there, there was nobody really who had oversight of it. And there has been this constant war between state and defense over who has responsibility for what. For the first time when Jerry Bremer was there, he worked for Rumsfeld. And then when it was switched and we had an ambassador, they started working for the State Department. This is something that both sides should have fixed up a long time ago. Second problem is, having spent half my life in the State Department, they simply are not staffed to do this kind of thing without a whole new appropriations and so forth. The number of security people we have that would be involved in that are simply just not sufficient. You'd have to hire about another 200 people. And state is always the most underfunded agency in Washington because it doesn't have a domestic constituency.
Now we go to Joan and Kiwani. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to make a comment about the first comment that the professor made when he came on the air, and he said that the first job of the President of the United States was to secure the country. But when he takes his oath of office, he says nothing about securing the country. He says that he will protect the Constitution of the United States, and that is also what our military, our soldiers say, that they will protect the Constitution of the United States, and I'm not sure that we're doing that. And then I have a question. I would like to know how this administration, which is against taxes but is constantly touting fiscal responsibility, how they can borrow and borrow and borrow with no absolute program as to how to repay this money.
Well, they're acting. First of all, it is generally conceived that the reason why you have a government, the first reason for it, is to protect the country, and that's what I mean. That's in the Federalist Papers. Any place you want to look, it's pretty well, I think, to accept the thing. Your second point is a very valid point, and I would guess if we had Bush here and asked him why he was doing it, he would say because this in his mind, at least, is to protect the country, and if we have to borrow, we'll do it. We've done it before. This is the American way, regardless of who's in power, who's sitting in the Oval Office. If there is a threat or perceived threat to national security, then it doesn't matter how much it costs. We pay whatever needs to be paid.
Thanks very much, Joan, for the call. Rick in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
I'd like to take issue with the good professor, something that he said earlier. He said that to defund the war would guarantee a Republican in the White House in 2008 because that would mean not supporting the troops. This is the biggest bunch of hokum, hooey, and disingenuousness that's peddled out there by the mainstream press and repeated by people that ought to know better. Look, you defund the war, the troops go home. They get on a plane, they go home. The Spanish people spoke. They said, we're fed up with this. They threw that rat Aznar out, and the troops came home. Okay? You defund the war, they get on a plane, they go home. It's a lie that the media repeats.
So, Professor Hirschspring, why do you say that if the Congress defunds the war, it guarantees a Republican in the White House in 08?
Well, first of all, the Spanish case is not comparable. It's a pretty bad example because when Spain, first of all, the Spanish troops weren't doing anything except sitting in a military base, and when they went home, nothing really changed. It was a symbolic political defeat of the United States. It had nothing to do with the war. You defund the war. I would have Nancy Pelosi come on and ask her about what the dangers are of defunding the war. The Democrats have always had a problem after Vietnam. It took them almost 10 years to recover from being looked upon as the party of anti-military, anti-security. You defund the war, and the soldiers come home, and the Middle East goes up in flames. Your gas price goes up to $8 or $9 because of it. The consequences of putting the guys on an airplane and bringing them home are much, much more widespread than Rick makes them out to be. There would be, we could spend the whole session on that. What would probably happen?
Yeah, the Middle East will go up in flames, is what you said.
Well, I think it's pretty good. Iraq moves in, Turkey moves in the north. You start having the civil war in the Iranians move in. A civil war in Iraq. You get the rest of the Sunnis involved to protect the Sunnis in Iraq. I mean, the consequences, I think, are just absolutely abysmal. I'd be the first one to say that this was one of the stupidest foreign policy moves the country's ever made. I've written a book outlining where I think the deception was involved in the Pentagon, which is primarily where the problem came from. But I think we're, in an essence, if the best analogy I can come up with is like the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, and we're trying to find a way, and I know Petraeus, and I know he's very sincere in what he's doing, trying to find a way to get out. The problem is it's not that easy.
Yeah. You know, it almost sounds like the Middle East will go up in flames even if the funding's there.
That's a possibility. I can't argue against that. I mean, let's say the Cheney gets his way and we end up going in and bombing. I mean, just make up a scenario. We bomb the factory that's producing the IEDs. We go ahead and hit their nuclear facilities hard. And so what happens, we then have Hezbollah blows up in the Lebanon, we have Hamas blowing up in the Gaza Strip, we start having different ones of their groups blowing up things in this country, and, you know, who Katie bar the door, where's it going to end?
Yeah.
So it's a situation where, unfortunately, we're sort of damned if we do and damned if we don't. What the military is trying to do is, we all know that the real problem is a political one, not a military one. We can handle the military problem. It's getting the Iraqis to work back together. And since we can't get these idiots in Baghdad to work together, the military has been working at the local level, trying to build the alliances down there. And they've had quite a bit of success.
Yeah, Rick, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and again, why do you think the Congress isn't defunding this war if they're not afraid of the consequences?
Well, because the media propagate this idea that if they do that, you know, they want to compare it to Vietnam, and again, it's all media driven.
Yeah.
You read it in the AP, not in the good press, McClatchy and other good papers, but New York Times and all that, they repeat that mantra. Oh, Vietnam, you know, they'll be tarred, and you know that's ridiculous, and that's
okay.
Just not going to happen. And the players in the Middle East, like Iran, Syria, Saudi Arabia, they would not let it descend into chaos. Of course, there'd be some chaos, but they would not. It would be in their own best interest to rein in the situation, and that they'd probably come to an accommodation. But to say that, oh, you know, that would be against the troops. No, the troops get on the plane, they go home. Okay, and that's what needs to be done.
All right, Dale Hirschspring. This is the Congress believes this because the media tells them that.
It doesn't matter why they believe it. The fact is, they believe it, and if they believe it, it's a reality that has to be dealt with. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe Rick wasn't listening to Ahmadinejad when he was in Colombia, but I'm not certain that he's playing with the same deck of cards that we're playing with, that the rest of the world is playing with. And I think to say that the Iranians are predictable in one way or another is just absolute nonsense. There is a major problem, and as I have said before, Israel is not going to allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon, and if they go, we'll get blamed for it, and we have been trying to buy them off by arguing for diplomacy, and that's fine, except it's not working,
And at some point in time, if we're going to get blamed for it anyway, then we might as well do it ourselves and do it well. And that's the danger I see.
We're talking with Dale Hirschspring, University Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, author of many books, including Rumsfeld's War, Arrogance of Power. Talking with us about the latest news about Iraq and the request by President Bush for an additional $46 billion for war funding, making the total request now $196 billion since October the 1st. Democrats are saying they're not going to rubber stamp this request and are in no hurry to pass this war funding bill. We're talking about the battle over war funding and other issues with Iraq. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a thought or a question for our guest, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will discuss post-U.S. scenarios in Iraq, from the horrific to the somewhat hopeful. Talking with the guests, including a journalist and author whose most recent piece is Post-U.S. Scenarios, The Bad, The Worse, and The Ugly. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about Iraq and President Bush's request for more funding for the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. President Bush says he needs another $46 billion to give troops what they need to, quote, get the job done in Iraq and Afghanistan. He outlined his congressional war funding request in a meeting with veterans and military personnel on Monday. He urged lawmakers to put aside their partisan disagreements and to make sure our troops have what it takes to succeed. In all, the Bush administration has now asked for more than $196 billion to fund operations since the budget year began on October the 1st. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says the president should not expect a rubber stamp on his latest request. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Americans want instead a plan to bring the troops home. Democrats on Capitol Hill say they won't rush on the request. President Bush says he wants it by Christmas, but a key House committee chair says that the Bush proposal won't be considered until next year. We welcome your questions about this for our guest, Professor Dale Hirschspring, and Noah in Menominee is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Professor. Thank you for being on. I think that really this comes down to a matter of accountability and holding the president and Vice President Cheney accountable for getting us into this mess. They've both profited, as well as companies like Halliburton, billions of dollars. And why can't we, you know, basically put these people on trial and get the money out of them for getting us into this mess in the first place? We also need someone to get in and further investigate the happenings of 9/11 and the systematic destruction of the World Trade Center's towers by the government. I take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Yeah. What do you make of that, Professor Hirschspring? We hear from callers like that from time to time who think that 9/11 was a government inside job.
Stupid. I mean, that's the only word to use for it. I mean, there's just been too much work done and too many people have handled it. They had them the other day. They were causing problems. When it was speaking, they were standing in the comedian show.
Oh, yeah, but Bill Maher's real-time show on HBO.
They're like the Flat Earth organization. I mean, what can I say? It's their right to believe what they want to. As far as profited, I have not seen anything. I'm very skeptical. Until I can see something that shows that the president and the vice president have profited, even though the vice president was in Halliburton before, I simply don't accept it because I don't know. His stuff was all put, apparently everything was put in escrow when he came in. The reason why you have Halliburton, I think this is something listeners might want to know. The military, because of the drawdown and because of the fewer troops, cannot sustain a lot of operations because it doesn't have the cooks and the cleaning staff and everything to do those jobs. So there's two big firms, Halliburton and another one. They have a contract with the Pentagon because they guarantee that they will be able to move within 3 days to fill this. That's why they use these big conglomerates to do this sort of stuff, is because no other company can do it.
Mm.
Next, we go to Paul in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, yeah, so going back to a caller's comment a little while ago about borrowing and borrowing and borrowing, and your guest said that, you know, we have to defend the country and we're willing to spend whatever we have to, and that's true. But what about the tax cuts? Why are we borrowing and selling all these bonds to China and everybody else and increasing our debt loads on this country? Why not restore the tax cuts or remove the tax cuts that were put in place so that we pay for the war? It's a pay-as-we-go kind of a thing. The public has not borne any of the costs for this war except for the families who have people over there. We should spread this out. We should raise taxes and pay for the war.
Okay, well, the problem is, I see, and again, I'm not an economist, mm-hmm. okay, let me qualify myself by saying that. The problem is, if the tax cuts were reversed, it would not go toward the war. It would immediately be used, but looked upon, we'll do what the Democrats want to do with it, which is to use it on social programs. And the tax cuts have had, as I'm told, a very positive effect on the economy for lots of reasons, but if you cut the tax backs, you replace the tax cuts, it wouldn't go to the war anyway.
Yeah. An email from Joe in River Falls wonders if you think it's possible the Bush administration will declare war with Iran on behalf of Iraq.
No, I don't see it. I mean, I don't. Nobody declares war anymore in a nuclear age. It simply is not done. We fought the Russians for, you know, 40 years by not ever declaring war because we didn't want to get into that. I think that if something happens, it would be a case of an American airstrike, unless the Israelis decided something on their own against the factory that produces the IEDs and against the nuclear facilities.
Yeah. Don in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, John. Thanks for taking my mm-hmm. call. Yeah, Professor, I guess, you know, at the beginning of the show, you said he's supposed to be the commander-in-chief, supposed to protect the country, his number one job. You know, I don't see him doing that because, you know, we're in Iraq, but at the same time, we're defunding. We've funded the border fence, but we're not building it. We only built 13 miles of it. We got two border agents sitting in jail. And we got a congressman that's been a judge before saying that they have not been given due process. So the average citizen, how does he, you know, reconcile with this thing? And I don't, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see a Democrat or a Republican being able to get us out of this because they both have their vested interests in either the war or the border.
Well, the problem that you raised the question about the fence and the two border guard troops who were put in jail. The Democrats don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole because they want the Hispanic vote, and the Republicans are scared to actually go build a thing because they're also worried about the Hispanic vote. Bush managed to increase his Hispanic vote last time around considerably, or at least the first time, second round, and he doesn't want to run the risk of alienating that group. And so, consequently, even though there's overwhelming support for a fence, and I think you're probably also right about the two border agents, The both parties are scared to death to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
We are talking with Dale Hirschbring, University Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University, talking in large part over President Bush's new request for war funding and whether you want Congress to approve another $46 billion in funding for Iraq and Afghanistan. The president wants this by Christmas. Should Congress approve this? Do you want Congress to end funding for the war altogether? I'm wondering if you blame Congress for not ending the war in Iraq. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Don in Germantown is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my mm-hmm. call. I get tired of people always saying this country went to war. Bush and Cheney lied to us. They took us to war. And it's now been made very obvious of that. I'm also tired of us paying for it. When we can come up with all this money for a war and for tax cuts for the well-to-do oil companies, billion-dollar tax cuts, I don't understand why we can't do an S-CHIP program for the children. The priorities are all wrong. Dealing primarily with the rich, and as far as Cheney goes, his company is making billions, and they put out no-bid contracts for this war. So it was just Halliburton that was able to get all the contracts. and decide whether or not they wanted to hand out any contracts to anybody else. There was a no bid contract went out. It's so obvious it reeks. This is all about money, and it's all about their friends getting rich on the cost of us. And this war was the only way that Bush would get reelected. They said that in the beginning, that if he wasn't at war, he would never win a second election. They won a second election by going to war. And as long as they keep prouding war and terror, people are going to still believe that they have to vote for these people. And I think it is totally wrong. I'll take my comments off of here.
First of all, as I try to explain, no bid contract is in a program that existed, pre-existed prior to the Bush administration. And there is no evidence to indicate that Cheney is making these billions of dollars that the person claims.
Oops, I think we might have lost our guest.
Oh,
there you are. Okay.
I'm here. Mm-hmm. As far as the idea that Bush and Cheney lied, first of all, I've just written a book on the topic. There was one area where it was not Bush or Cheney that lied. On the weapons of mass destruction, frankly, I give the president a pass on that because it was believed, everybody believed they'd had them. I had guests here from Europe just yesterday. They thought that they had them. You can argue whether the threat was imminent or not. That's fine. There was no question that Rumsfeld and his people made up, created out of cloth, the whole idea of the connection between Saddam Hussein and the Al-Qaeda. That was made up and paid for primarily by Doug Feith. It's easy to make these kind of general statements, but frankly, there simply isn't the evidence for it.
Thank you for the call, Don. Mike in Fond du Lac is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Good morning. Good
morning.
I agree with you about the situation we're in. We can't just simply pull out of Iraq. Iran is salivating at the opportunity to get in there and control all that oil. People don't know their history if they don't remember the animosity between Iraq and Iran. One of the things I think that we could do in order to get ourselves out of there, and I think we'll be in there for another 5 years, is to have an Apollo-type program to improve our energy independence. Additional pipelines coming in from Canada and Mexico to bring in different crudes, nuclear power plants, fuel-efficient vehicles, more effort put towards photovoltaics. If something like that were to happen in 5 years over in Iraq, we're in a position where we've got alternate fuel sources. That I think might be something that we could do to try to alleviate our dependence on the oil from the Middle East. And another point I wanted to make, people need to just believe or think that Israel is basically the 51st state of the United States, because anything that happens to Israel, the United States is going to be right there to help them, hand in hand, side by side. So anything that occurs to Israel basically is happening to the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much, Mike. Professor Hirschsprung?
Well, I think everybody wants energy independence. The question is whose stock are you going to go to try and get it? And we'd be so much better off if we had it. The president wants to drill in Anwar, up the far northern part of Alaska. They want to do the coastal drilling, and people don't want that, so that's part of it's our own fault. We haven't built a new refinery for so many years. It's part of our problem. Israel, in fact, is in many ways a 51st state, and I can tell you, having been there and having dealt with the Israeli lobby, they are very powerful, and if anybody messes with Israel, they're messing with the United States. It's just simply a fact of life. It's not saying I like it or I don't like it. It's just the way it is.
Do you think Iran is salivating over the oil in Iraq?
Oh, well, not so much salivating over the oil in Iraq. They're salivating over the fact that they will strengthen their hand in dealing with the West, because they can then charge what they want and get the West on its knees.
Yeah. Mike was guessing 5 years at least that U.S. troops would be in Iraq. Do you think that's about it?
Well, I think the people who seem to think somehow or other that Hillary's going to pull all these troops out, I think they're blowing hot air. It's just not going to happen. There's going to have to be some stay there. How long? I don't know. I've heard 5 years as well. Excuse me, that's my Irish Wolfhounds.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard 5 years. I've heard other estimates. It's just too important a place to simply leave and in a chaotic mess.
Yeah. Someone must be at the house. But Jesse in Waukegan, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you, ma'am. I have a question. I want to know why we haven't concentrated on Mr. Bin Laden. I think the Iraq deal was a vendetta left over from the Gulf War and to take heat off of Bin Laden, and I'd like to know why. And as far as funding the war, yes, ma'am, we've committed ourselves to this war. We need to fight it and win it. We don't need to go in and patty cake and negotiate it to death like we're doing. And I'll shut up and get off the air, and I am enjoying your program tremendously.
Well, thank you for calling in, Jesse. Professor Hirschspring?
Well, I don't think we've taken an eye off of Bin Laden. The problem is Bin Laden, as far as we know, is over is in Pakistan, and we cannot just simply go into Pakistan and without that government's permission. It's not given us the permission, won't give us the permission. Why did we go into Iraq? There's a number of reasons. One is that there was a certain group that thought that if Iraq became democratic, that would make the world safe for Israel, Middle East anyway, and then it was spread. There was also people who were convinced that Saddam was a danger to the United States, and there were also that group, which is, as Jesse pointed out, who felt that it was about time we did the original war, Gulf War, first Gulf War. We did it right.
Yeah. Amanda in Hillsborough is with us now. Hi.
Hi, thank you, Professor. I have a question as to how much of this budget is going towards the huge bonuses to re-up for these soldiers. My son has been in Iraq, and his tour of duty is done in February. They are offering these soldiers like $35,000 instant bonus to re-up for 3 years come the beginning of next year. So I wanted to know how much of this budget is going towards these huge bonuses they're trying to get these soldiers to re-up for.
That does sound like a big bonus, Professor.
Well, Hirschman. In fact, the Special Forces have gone up to $150,000.
Wow.
It's simply supply and demand. The fact is that people take a Special a Forces guy, a SEAL or a Special Forces, they can quit and go work for these security firms and make that kind of money. And so the military says, we want to keep him. We've got to figure out a way to keep him. How do we do it? And they're coming up with the bonuses. We don't have a draft, so we have to. What can you do to entice guys to stay? And what they do is they come up with these bonuses. Nobody likes doing it, but in fact, they're doing it now. It's gotten so bad among Army captains that they're giving Army captains $35,000 if they'll agree to serve another 4 or 5 years in the Army.
Yeah, so is that included, you know, in this, whatever, $196 billion?
Oh, I'm sure it is, but it's something that you'd have to have the whole budget, because it's just sort of something putting in personnel costs, and then you'd have to go in through personnel costs and find out what the breakdown is, and I don't have a copy of that, of the budget.
Well, we're out of time anyway. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dale Hirschspring, University Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University. Member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, and author of many books, including Rumsfeld's Wars, Arrogance of Power. That's hard to say. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour, and to Karen Prager as well for production. And thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.